with makeshift tents of clothing and blankets. Those sheltering in schools are literally starving due to the severe lack of food. They are deprived of all the basics to live. Newborns and babies do not have the milk they require to grow. In Gaza, death takes on many forms besides corpses and bodies mangled from explosions. Water is scarce. Each school typically has 4 water tanks that can hold up to 6,000 liters. Yet these tanks are not being filled on a daily basis. For these tanks to be filled, water needs to be transported via a truck from the main station to the school. However, there isn't fuel for the water trucks to operate. And even if there is fuel for the truck, a generator is needed to pump the water from the truck, and there is no fuel for such a generator. To use the restroom, the people must wait in line. Imagine standing in line for an hour to use the restroom. What about the children who can't hold it for that long? This is a whole new level of suffering. Privacy is non-existent in the schools. One classroom hosts at least 5 families along with yours. Sometimes people split up into groups of men and women, which results in the separation of families. Daughters are separated from fathers in these catastrophic times. The schools could be prone to outbreaks of viruses. With the lack of cleanliness and the overcrowding, the schools could harbor pathogens that could easily pass from person to person. From there, it could spread throughout Gaza. According to Al Jazeera English, sewage flows in the streets of Gaza as all key sanitation services have ceased operating, raising the alarming prospect of an enormous surge of gastrointestinal and infectious diseases among local populations, including cholera. For Gaza's 2.3 million residents, finding drinkable water has become close to impossible. At a school run by the United Nations Relief Agency for Palestinian Refugees in Khan Yunis, 33-year-old Osma Sagr attempted to fill some bottles with water for his thirsty children. He took a sip and grimaced in disgust at the saltiness of the fluid before letting out a long sigh. He told Al Jazeera, "It's polluted and unsuitable. But my children always drink it. There is no alternative." Sagr's 1-year-old son has diarrhea, but he cannot find medicines in hospitals or paramedics to treat him. He said, "Even if I find it, the problem remains. The water is polluted and salty water, not suitable for drinking. I'm afraid that eventually I'm going to lose one of my children to this poisoning." The World Health Organization has recorded more than 44,000 cases of diarrhea and 70,000 acute respiratory infections, but real numbers may be significantly higher. Recently, the UN agency said it was extremely concerned that rains and floods during the approaching winter season will make an already dire situation even worse. Richard Brennan, Regional Emergency Director for the Eastern Mediterranean region at WHO, told Al Jazeera, "We are hearing about several hundred people per toilet at the UNRWA centers, and those have been overflowing, so people are doing open defecation. They have to find a place to go to the bathroom in the grounds where they're staying. That's a huge public health risk, and also very humiliating." Brennan said overcrowding, lack of solid waste management, poor sanitation and open-air defecation were all contributing to the spread of diseases, including diarrhea, respiratory infections, and skin infections, including scabies. UN agencies have warned that the collapse of water and sanitation services could even spark bouts of cholera if urgent humanitarian aid is not delivered. If nothing changes, there will be more and more people falling sick, and the risk of major outbreaks will increase dramatically. Al Jazeera English added, WHO estimates that the average person in Gaza is currently consuming just 3 liters of water per day for drinking and sanitation. This compares with the minimum of 7.5 liters recommended by the agency in the emergency situations. The halt of key services, including water, desalination plants, sewage treatment, and hospitals, has led to a 40% increase in diarrhea for people taking shelter in UNRWA schools, the agency said. It estimated that about 70% of Gaza's 2.3 million people, more than half of whom are children, no longer have access to clean water. Recently, the Zionist regime authorities allowed just over 23 liters of fuel to be brought into the Strip via Egypt, but they restricted the use of this fuel to trucks transporting the little aid coming in. The UNRWA said it needed 160,000 liters of fuel a day for basic humanitarian operations. The agency's Commissioner General Philip Lazzarini told a press conference, "This fuel cannot be used for the overall humanitarian response, including for medical and water facilities or the work of UNRWA. It's appalling that fuel continues to be used as a weapon of war. This seriously paralyzes our work and the delivery of assistance to the Palestinian communities in Gaza." The Ministry of Health in Gaza has warned that the lack of clean water caused by fuel shortages has put the lives of 1,100 patients with kidney failure, including 38 children, particularly at risk. Among them is Samer Abdin's 22-year-old brother, Mohammed, who has been suffering from acute renal colic due to the poor water quality. Abdin, 40, told Al Jazeera as he searched the streets of Khan Yunis for bottled water to buy, "When he is in great pain, he screams. While bottled water is now expensive and very hard to find, he refused to give up the search," he said. "I don't want to lose him in this unjust war." A senior Iranian lawmaker has said,
contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
On October 7th, Hamas launched Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, the group's biggest military action against the Israeli regime. It was a natural response to years of brutal oppression against the Gaza Strip and the deliberate desecration of Al-Aqsa Mosque, among other things. The recent escalation between Hamas and the Israeli regime has now stoked fears that the conflict might spill over into the whole region, dragging major players such as the Islamic Republic into the war. A few days after the onset of the escalation, Iran's foreign minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian warned Israel that West Asia could spiral out of control if it did not stop strikes in Gaza. This warning was widely interpreted as a declaration of intent for Tehran to enter the conflict, if not directly, via its close allies such as Lebanon's Hezbollah and Syria. Such interpretations have already raised the specter of a major escalation. But should the region brace itself for a doomsday scenario? Will Israel attack Iran after years of warnings? And what's Iran's position? These and more on this episode of Iran Today. Since the very beginning, Iran has taken a clear-cut position towards the developments in the Gaza Strip. The Islamic Republic has lauded the success of the October 7th operation by Hamas and at the same time has condemned Israel's bombardment of the Gaza Strip, in which more than 8,000 people have been killed. At the same time, Tehran has repeatedly declared that it opposes the conflict's expansion to other parts of West Asia, while also denying involvement in the October 7th attacks. This all has been clearly reflected in the words of the leader of the Islamic Revolution of Iran. Just 3 days after the Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei not only commended the military action, but also asserted that those who doubted this being the work of the Palestinians do not know the Palestinian nation and are miscalculating. Ayatollah Khamenei emphasized that while the entire Islamic world stands in solemn obligation to support the Palestinians and will do so with divine consent, this is the work of Palestinians themselves. This is Mr. Mehdi Azizi, the director of Negah No Center for Media Studies.
As for Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, Tehran has asserted that it was totally a Palestinian move. Basically, it was formulated and orchestrated by Palestinian think tanks and had nothing to do with Tehran. Needless to say, it doesn't mean that Tehran is indifferent to the issue. We asserted even back in 2006 that the Islamic Republic of Iran would support the Islamic resistance movement in Lebanon, Palestine, and wherever it might be. So again, it doesn't mean that Iran has abandoned the Palestinian cause or has stopped supporting the resistance movement. No, not at all. But again, the move is totally Palestinian.
Western and Israeli leaders have also said there was no evidence Iran was involved in the operation. Meanwhile, some, mainly in the West, say it remains unclear how far Iran would be willing to go in case of a wider escalation. To know more, we talked to Dr. Sadullah Zarei of Andishe Sazeh Noor Institute for Strategic Studies. He is also a professor of political science at Allama Tabatabai University. Dr. Zarei says Iran and the Israeli regime have been at loggerheads with each other for more than four decades.
Iran has really been at war with Israel during the past 45 years, as has Israel been at war with Iran. As you know, the Israelis, for instance, have assassinated some of our nuclear scientists, so this is a real war. The two sides are also involved in cyber war against each other. Iran has been steadfast in its support of the Palestinian nation against the atrocities of the Israeli regime. In the case of Operation Al-Aqsa, Tehran has shown its complete support. So, when it comes to the Palestinian cause, the Islamic Republic has never been on the margin. Currently, Iran's foreign minister is perhaps the only foreign minister among the Muslim countries that has traveled across the region to rally support for Palestine and the people in the Gaza Strip.
Since the victory of the Islamic Revolution in 1979, Iran has opposed the Israeli regime in favor of the Palestinian cause. And now Iran's potential entry into the Gaza war will open a new chapter in the hostilities between the two enemies. But what are the odds that Tehran takes this direction? On October 15th, Iran's foreign minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian said, "We have conveyed our message to Israel through its allies that if they do not cease their atrocities in Gaza, Iran cannot simply remain an observer." 2 days later, on October 17th, the leader of the Islamic Revolution issued a sterner warning to Israel, stating, "If the crimes of the Zionist regime continue, Muslims and resistance forces will become impatient, and no one can stop them." But does it mean direct involvement in a full-scale war? To Dr. Zari, all options are on the table. Do you think a direct military war would happen between Iran and Israel?
This is a real all-out war. But let's be more specific. Will Iran enter the conflict with its own jet fighters and missiles? If we feel that the situation will not be resolved without our direct military involvement, don't doubt that the Islamic Republic will do that. But in case it is not necessary, it's quite natural that we will not get involved in the conflict as we don't seek to fan the flames of the war. We will do our best to stop the war and prevent it from spilling over into the region. At the same time, we will do our best to save the Palestinian people from the Israeli bombardment.
Iran has made it clear time and again that it is only likely to engage in direct conflict if Israel attacks Iranian territory or Iran's strategic interests in other countries. During recent military drills in central Iran, Defense Minister Mohammad Reza Ashtiani warned that any inconsiderate act against Iran will provoke a strong reaction.
We are not after warmongering. This is not our strategy. The Islamic Republic of Iran has never started a war since its establishment. We have never started a tension in the region. Never. So the main principle is to avoid war, tension, and instability in the region. But this policy should not be unilateral. I mean, it's naive to see, for example, the Israeli regime is disrupting peace in the region and do nothing to stop it.
Despite its constant warnings, the Israeli regime appears to be reluctant to take direct military action against Iran. Tel Aviv does not have a death wish. The Israelis are fully aware that open confrontation with Iran could be very costly. Israel's embarrassing failure on October 7th against a resistance group is a telltale sign that the regime's claimed invincibility is no more than a myth. As a major country in the region with great military prowess and deterrence, Iran is no easy target for any country in the world, let alone a regime that cannot even defend itself against a Palestinian group.
Despite displaying animosity towards Iran, the Israeli regime seems to be unwilling to attack Iran directly. Why do you think that is?
It's not feasible for the Israeli regime. In Lebanon and Palestine, the resistance groups have become more powerful. The Iron Dome and the United States military aid have proved ineffective. As a Western expert put it the other way, the Israeli regime cannot even survive for 3 days without foreign aid and support. The blows Israeli regime has received since 2006 and the situation it is trapped in show that Israel is not prepared for a long, full-scale war.
Moreover, Israel has no common border with the Islamic Republic. The geographical distance between Haifa and the Iranian border city of Mehran is over 1,800 kilometers. And the regime would have great difficulty, if possible at all, to dispatch its forces to the Iranian borders. The regime may conduct airstrikes if it manages to pass over the skies of countries such as Syria and Iraq, which have close ties with Tehran, and if it manages to pass through Iran's defense system. This is Mr. Mehdi Khorsan, an Iranian expert in international relations. He thinks the Israeli regime will rue the day if it takes military action against Tehran.
How probable do you think that Iran and Israel will have a direct confrontation?
Look at the way they are dealing with Hamas, a lowly group with no significant support. The Israeli regime, for example, boasts about its Iron Dome. On the other hand, Hamas is a group with limited military power. It's a group under blockade which does not have the technical know-how when it comes to military things. And yet, you see, the regime cannot handle the situation and instead is killing women and children in blind rage. This can illuminate what the situation would look like for the regime in case it goes to war with Iran. Right now, Israel is engaged with Hamas, but there are other resistance groups. Hezbollah has just warned the regime and has not yet had a serious entry into the war theater. It seems that Hamas, the Islamic Jihad movement, and Hezbollah, if form a coalition, can wipe the regime off the region.
That said, the geographical conditions of Israel make the regime prone to Iran's retaliatory attacks. Despite Israel's claims about its military system, experience has shown that it is highly vulnerable, especially against a country like Iran. The Lebanese journalist and political analyst Mr. Hakam Amhaz agreed that geography plays a crucial role in this regard.
The region's geography is of paramount importance. In terms of geopolitics, geoeconomics, and geomilitary, the region is located in the middle between the East and the West, and almost 20% of the world economy is concentrated in this region. So, can you imagine what would happen to the world if something happens to this region? It means a huge loss, not just for the region, but for the whole world. Right now, countries such as the U.S., Russia, Iran, and China each have counted on this region for their own purposes. What happens in this region could be very critical. The next world war might start from this region.
In case of war with Iran, the Israeli regime has to fight on different fronts, as Iran's allies in the region would not remain mere bystanders. And above all, war with Iran would spill over the region with unintended consequences for the whole world. We asked Dr. Zari about what the West calls Iran's proxy war in the region. He said such war is against the Islamic Republic's core principles.
In your opinion, do you think that Iran would engage in a proxy war against Israel? That is, if Hezbollah decides to attack Israel, would that be Iran's proxy? And to what extent does Hezbollah comply with Iran's interests and commands?
Let me be quite frank. The Islamic Republic of Iran doesn't believe in the so-called proxy war. We don't consider proxy war as a legitimate defendable project. We don't believe that a group should bear the brunt for another group. Take Hezbollah, for example. The group is not subordinate to Iran and is not supposed to follow Iran's orders. As a resistance group, it has ties with Iran. It is Iran's ally but is independent of the Islamic Republic. The reason why Hezbollah exists is to defend Lebanon, not Iran. It is not acting as a proxy for Iran. The same is true about Hamas. Hamas does not act as a proxy for Iran and Palestine. The same is true about resistance groups in Iraq. None of these groups act as a proxy for the Islamic Republic.
This is Iran Today. Iran Today is broadcast every week on Fridays and Saturdays. This series analyzes major political, economic, cultural, and social events concerning Iran. So don't miss the opportunity to listen to Iran Today on IRIB English Radio.
Israel knows that crossing red lines and engaging in open confrontation with the Islamic Republic could pose an existential threat to the regime. That is why Tel Aviv has constantly pulled back from the brink of war and opted for low-intensity skirmishes that do not jeopardize its survival.
Israel's position on Iran has been inflexible. It has pursued for the so-called surgical strikes on Iranian nuclear facilities and has been implicated in the assassination of Iranian nuclear scientists, as well as sporadic acts of sabotage. We asked Mr. Khorsand if the Israeli regime would use its nuclear warheads against Iran.
In case of any attack, how probable do you think that this will lead to a nuclear war?
I think the Israeli regime would not use its nuclear warheads because of Iran's deterrence power that the country will use when the occasion arises. Moreover, it would be too naive to assume that the United States will give the regime the green light to use its nuclear warheads against Iran.
At the same time, since Israel cannot go into direct conflict with Iran as a regional heavyweight, the regime has always tried to drag the United States and its European allies into war with the Islamic Republic. And right now, Tel Aviv is desperately seeking to expand the conflict big enough for the entry of other countries. In short, pitting the United States against Tehran has been the biggest dream the regime has been chasing over the past few decades. After all, in 2002, former Prime Minister of Israel Ariel Sharon flew to Washington to urge then-U.S. President George Bush to invade Iran instead of Iraq. The Americans didn't because they knew any attack on Iran would be faced with national resistance.
It is said that the Israeli regime is trying to convince the U.S. to go into a full-scale battle with Iran. To what extent do you agree with this statement?
The Israeli regime has always sought to pit the Islamic Republic against its regional rivals and international enemies in a war of attrition. But I believe that the Americans are using their common sense, at least in this regard, and steer clear of a direct conflict with Iran, and they won't listen to the Israeli regime in this regard.
Going to war with the Islamic Republic of Iran is easier said than done. But in case of any serious attack, Israel's first attack might be the regime's last attack.
Since the victory of the Islamic Revolution, enmity towards the Israeli regime in support of the Palestinian nation has been an important part of Iran's foreign policy. But whether the country will enter the Palestinian-Israeli war or not is a question that history has answered.
How probable do you think that there would be a direct war between Iran and Israel?
Every side of the resistance movement knows what to do and does not wait for Iran to tell them what to do or not to do. Operation Al-Aqsa Flood has been undertaken by the Palestinian group alone. Iran's leader said that the country has nothing to do with the operation. This means that the resistance groups are in control and know what they're doing. We are in a volatile situation, but in my opinion, war between Iran and Israel, or between Iran and the U.S., is improbable.
Iran has always cherished the Palestinian cause and proposed peaceful solutions to end the prolonged conflict between the Arabs and Israel. At the same time, despite Israel's provocative behavior, the Islamic Republic has always exercised restraint for the sake of stable peace in the region. But Israel should know it's playing with fire if it's going to act the villain of the peace. to Mr. Azizi, Tehran enjoys both military deterrence and political prudence in its overarching strategic vision.
Look, Iran's missile capability, I'm not an expert and I don't know the matter in detail, but Iran possesses missiles that can reach Tel Aviv in minutes. Basically, Israel's strategic depth is accessible by the very resistance groups in Palestine. There is no question concerning Iran's military strength. It's undeniable. I need to add that Iran, at the same time that possesses military deterrence, has exercised strategic prudence over the past four decades. In other words, prudence, military power, and deterrence have made up Tehran's defense strategy.
So far, without facing Iran in the war, it seems that the regime has already lost the war on at least two fronts. It has lost its reputation as a regime with a powerful army and intelligence services, and it has almost lost its hope of a durable normalization with Arab states.
That's all for today. Thank you from the whole team. We hope you enjoyed this edition of Iran Today. Please do tune in same time next week and each week after. Till next time, take care.
Your option for today and a better tomorrow. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
The Palestinian Islamic Resistance Movement Hamas and the Israeli regime have agreed to a temporary ceasefire deal. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Iran's Press TV has covered this story and tells us more. The Palestinian Islamic Resistance Movement Hamas has said it has provided a response to Qatar and Egypt concerning the potential of a ceasefire between the Gaza Strip-based Palestinian Resistance Movement and the Israeli regime, which has brought Gaza under an unrelenting war. In a statement on Tuesday, 21st of November, Hamas's Arab and Islamic Relations Office said it had provided Qatari and Egyptian officials with a response a day earlier. Talks concerning a potential ceasefire have been going on under Qatar and Egypt's supervision for a month now, the statement read. The Israeli enemy, however, keeps procrastinating, the statement noted, adding that whenever we got close to temporary ceasefire, the enemy went back to a square one. Also on Tuesday, 21st of November, senior Hamas official Izzat al-Rishq told Al Jazeera television that the details of the deal would be released by Qatar and Egypt in the coming hours. Izzat al-Rishq emphasized that any agreement was necessarily based on the conditions of the Palestinian resistance. Izzat al-Rishq further confirmed that Israel, especially the regime's prime minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, had been obstructing the ceasefire talks. More than 14,000 Palestinians have been killed in the brutal Israeli war against Gaza since 7th of October, when the Israeli regime launched its deadly military campaign in response to a resistance operation on the same day. The Hamas statement also strongly refuted the Israeli regime's claim that the movement ran a command center underneath the Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City, which has taken the brunt of the Israeli regime's assault
on the territory's healthcare system. The Hamas statement said the enemy claims about the existence of Hamas tunnels underneath the hospital is a farce that no one believes in. Meanwhile, Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi has told leaders of the BRICS group of emerging economies that members of the organization should designate Israel a terrorist entity because of the extensive crimes that it has committed in Gaza over the past few weeks. It is necessary that this fake regime be recognized as a terrorist regime and its army be regarded as a terrorist organization, President Ebrahim Raisi stressed. The plea was part of a 7 proposals submitted by the Iranian president to a virtual BRICS summit held at the organization's headquarters in South Africa on Tuesday, 21st of November. The BRICS summit was convened at Iran's request to discuss the ongoing conflict in Palestine, where the Israeli regime has killed more than 13,000 people in Gaza as part of a relentless war to confront resistance fighters in the territory. In his address to the meeting, President Ebrahim Raisi said BRICS members should unite their efforts to break an Israeli siege on Gaza and facilitate safe delivery of humanitarian aid to the territory, where more than 2.3 million Palestinians are in a dire humanitarian situation. President Raisi also said BRICS members should help set up an inquiry into Israel's use of banned weapons in Gaza, including its use of white phosphorus bombs against the civilian population of the territory. President Ebrahim Raisi further called on members of the bloc to recognize the right of the Palestinian nation to self-defense against Israeli aggression, as well as the Palestinian struggle to liberate its lands occupied by Israel for decades. Also, South African legislators have voted in favor of closing Israel's embassy in South Africa, expressing their solidarity with Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip, which has been under a brutal Israeli assault. South African lawmakers passed a motion to shut down the Israeli regime's diplomatic mission in Pretoria with 248 votes in favor and 91 votes against on Tuesday, 21st of November. This was the culmination of weeks of criticism by South African President Cyril Ramaphosa of Israel's genocidal war against Palestinians in Gaza. The Al Jazeera television network has also covered this story and tells us more. The Israeli regime and the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas have agreed to a temporary ceasefire deal that will enable the release of about 50 people who have been held captive in Gaza by Hamas since 7th of October in exchange for 150 Palestinians held in Israeli prisons. The Israeli cabinet backed the agreement after talks on a Qatari-mediated deal that continued into the early hours of Wednesday morning, 22nd of November, with Israeli media reporting heated exchanges between members of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's government. In the end, only 3 of the 38 members of the cabinet voted against the truce. Israel's National Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gvir and 2 other extremist members of Netanyahu's cabinet voted against the deal. The Prime Minister's office said the deal would require Hamas to release at least 50 women and children during a 4-day truce. For every additional 10 hostages released, the pause will be extended by 1 day, it said, without mentioning the release of Palestinian prisoners in exchange. Israel's government is committed to returning all the hostages home, the statement said. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas, which is based in Gaza, also released a statement confirming that 50 women and children held in the territory would be freed in exchange for Israel releasing 150 Palestinian women and children from Israeli prisons. It said that Israel would also stop all military actions in Gaza and that hundreds of trucks carrying humanitarian, medical and fuel supplies and aid would be allowed into the territory. The accord is the first truce of a war in which the Israeli regime has flattened vast swathes of Gaza, which is home to about 2.3 million Palestinians. Palestinian officials say at least 14,100 people have been killed, while the United Nations says about 1.7 million Palestinians have been forced from their homes. The American newspaper The Daily Beast has also covered this same story. Israel's cabinet voted to approve a deal for the release of around 50 captives held by Hamas in exchange for a four-day pause in fighting. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu confirmed on Tuesday, 21st of November. The release of around 150 imprisoned Palestinians is also expected to be part of the deal, according to multiple reports from Israeli news organizations Haaretz and Kan, the national broadcaster, but went unmentioned by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Israel's Channel 12 News reported the first release of hostages is set for Thursday, so long as the Israeli Supreme Court does not move to block the deal. Also, about 300 aid trucks per day would be allowed to enter Gaza Strip during the pause in the fighting. In a statement released on Telegram, the Palestinian Islamic Resistance Movement Hamas confirmed a truce agreement based on our responsibility towards our patient Palestinian people and to provide relief and heal their wounds. The breakthrough was confirmed after both the Israeli regime and the Hamas movement indicated earlier on Tuesday that a truce may finally materialize 6 weeks into the conflict. In its statement, the Palestinian Resistance Movement Hamas called the talks difficult and complex.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The issue of Palestine is the first issue of the world of Islam by Ayatollah Khamenei. Even the repeated and great problems that the enemies of the revolution imposed on the Islamic Republic of Iran failed to discourage the Islamic Republic from defending Palestine. One instance of the problems that they caused was the 8-year war waged on Iran by Saddam Hussein, who had been goaded by America and England and was supported by reactionary Arab governments. Thus, new blood was pumped into the veins of Palestine. Muslim Mujahid groups started to emerge in Palestine. The Lebanese resistance formed a powerful and a new front against the enemy and its supporters. Instead of relying on Arab governments and seeking help from global organizations such as the United Nations, which were accomplices of the arrogant powers, Palestine started to rely on itself, its youth, its deep Islamic faith, and its selfless men and women. This is the key to all achievements. Over the past 3 decades, this process has been accelerated on a daily basis.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The humiliating defeat of the Zionist regime in Lebanon in the year 2006, the humiliating failure of the arrogant Zionist army in Gaza in the year 2008, the Zionist regime's escape from South Lebanon and withdrawal from Gaza, the establishment of the resistance government in Gaza, and in brief, changing the Palestinian nation from a group of helpless and hopeless people to a hopeful, resistant, and self-confident nation. These were outstanding characteristics of the past 30 years. This general picture will be clear when attempts at compromise and treacherous activities, whose goal is to break down resistance and make Palestinian groups and Arab governments acknowledge the legitimacy of Israel, are also reflected upon in an appropriate way. These activities, which were initiated with the Camp David Accords by the treacherous and unworthy successor of Jamal Abdel Nasser, have always been aimed at undermining the steely determination of resistance forces. During the Camp David Accords, for the first time, an Arab government officially acknowledged that the Palestinian lands belonged to the Zionists, and it signed the papers according to which Palestine was recognized as the homeland of Jews.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Like the Zionist regime, the U.S. has systematically violated international law in its wars, manufactured political justifications to suit each case, and evaded international accountability. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the first part, please. Middle East Eye wrote, there has been reporting on U.S. war crimes for many years and on identical crimes committed by U.S. allies and proxies like the Zionist regime. Examples include the illegal use of military force to try to remove enemy governments or regimes, hostile military occupations, disproportionate military violence justified by claims of fighting terrorism, the bombing and killing of civilians, and the mass destruction of whole cities. Most Americans share a general aversion to war, but tend to accept this militarized foreign policy because they are tragically susceptible to propaganda, the machinery of public manipulation that works hand-in-hand with the machinery of killing to justify otherwise unthinkable horrors. This process of manufacturing consent works in a number of ways. One of the most effective forms of propaganda is silence, simply not telling people, and certainly not showing them what war really does to the people whose homes and communities have been turned into America's latest battlefield. In its most devastating campaign in recent years, the United States military dropped more than 100,000 bombs and missiles on Mosul in Iraq, Raqqa in Syria, and other areas occupied by Daesh. An Iraqi Kurdish intelligence report estimated that more than 40,000 civilians were killed in Mosul, while Raqqa was totally destroyed. The shelling of Raqqa was the heaviest U.S. artillery bombardment since the Vietnam War. Yet, it was barely reported in the U.S. corporate media. A recent New York Times article about the traumatic brain injuries and post-traumatic stress disorders suffered by the U.S. artillery men operating 155mm howitzers, which each fired up to 10,000 shells into Raqqa, was appropriately titled "A Secret War, A Strange New Wounds, and Silence from the Pentagon." Shrouding such mass death and destruction in secrecy is a remarkable achievement. When British playwright Harold Pinter was awarded the Nobel Prize for Literature in 2005 in the midst of the Iraq War, he titled his novel speech Art, Truth, and Politics and used it to shine a light on this diabolical aspect of U.S. war making. After mentioning the hundreds of thousands of killing in Indonesia, Greece, Uruguay, Brazil, Paraguay, Haiti, Turkey, the Philippines, Guatemala, El Salvador, Chile, and Nicaragua, Pinter asked, "Did they take place? And are they in all cases attributable to U.S. foreign policy?" The answer is yes. They did take place, and they are attributable to American foreign policy. He continued, "But you wouldn't know it. It never happened. Nothing ever happened. Even while it was happening, it wasn't happening. It didn't matter. It was of no interest. The crimes of the U.S. have been systematic, constant, vicious, remorseless, but very few people have actually talked about them. You have to hand it to America. It has exercised a quiet clinical manipulation of power worldwide while masquerading as a force for universal good. It's a brilliant, even witty, highly successful act of hypnosis." But the wars and the killing go on day after day, year after year, out of sight and out of mind for most Americans. Since 2001, the U.S. and its allies have dropped more than 350,000 bombs and missiles on 9 countries, including at least 14,000 in the current war on Gaza. That's an average of 44 airstrikes per day, day in, day out, for 22 years. The Zionist regime, in its present war on Gaza, with children making up 40% of the more than 13,000 people it has killed to date, would surely like to mimic the extraordinary U.S. ability to hide its brutality. But despite the Israeli regime's efforts to impose a media blackout, the massacre is taking place in a small, enclosed, densely populated urban area, often called an open-air prison, where the world can see a great deal more than usual of how it impacts real people. The Zionist regime has killed a record number of journalists in Gaza, And this appears to be a deliberate strategy, as when U.S. forces targeted journalists in Iraq. But we are still seeing horrifying videos and photos of daily new atrocities. Dead and wounded children, hospitals struggling to treat the injured, and desperate people fleeing from one place to another through the rubble of their destroyed homes. Another reason this war is not so well hidden is because the Zionist regime is waging it, not the U.S. The U.S. is supplying most of the weapons, has sent aircraft carriers to the region, and dispatched U.S. Marine General James Glynn to provide tactical advice based on his experience conducting similar massacres in Fallujah and Mosul in Iraq. But Israeli regime leaders seem to have overestimated the extent to which the U.S. information warfare machine would shield them from public scrutiny and political accountability. Unlike Fallujah, Mosul, and Raqqa, people all over the world are seeing videos of the unfolding catastrophe on their computers, phones, and televisions. Netanyahu, Biden, and the corrupt defense analysts on cable news networks are no longer the ones creating the story, as they try to tack self-serving narratives onto the horrifying reality we can all see for ourselves. With the reality of war and genocide staring the world in the face, people everywhere are challenging the impunity with which the Israeli regime is systematically violating international humanitarian law. Michael Crowley and Edward Wong have reported in the New York Times that the Zionist regime officials are defending their actions in Gaza by pointing to U.S. war crimes, insisting that they are simply interpreting the laws of war the same way that the United States has interpreted them in Iraq and other U.S. war zones. They compare Gaza to Fallujah, Mosul, and even Hiroshima.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Pureza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
On Wednesday, Palestinians living through the ongoing Israeli brutal assault in the Gaza Strip met with the head of the Catholic Church, Pope Francis, on the sidelines of a general audience held in St. Peter's Square at the Vatican. The Palestinian delegation was composed of 10 people with relatives in Gaza and in the West Bank and included Muslims and Christians. Pope Francis turned his thoughts to those suffering in the conflict, describing what is happening in the Holy Land as, quote, terrorism, not war. After meeting with the pontiff, family members of Palestinians living in Gaza held a press conference in the Paul VI Hall, during which they spoke out the pain.
200 complete families have been wiped out from the civil register. This is with the threaten of lack of water, lack of food, lack of security, etc. This has one meaning. These people are asked to move out from their places using power. This is genocide.
Before, we used to talk about, you know, hopes and recognition of a state and all these things that we really hope for. But at this point, I mean, what's happening in Gaza is a catastrophe. And the catastrophe, we are even worried what's going to happen later on after war is finished. And when it stops, the first thing we want to think of, you know, 1.2 1,300,000 are displaced with no homes.
Since the start of the aggression, Tel Aviv has killed over 14,500 Palestinians, including nearly 6,000 children and almost 4,000 women, injuring at least 33,000 others, according to the Hamas-run health ministry in the Gaza Strip. Over the past weeks, the Italian government, as well as opposition lawmakers, have been voicing support for